Let's move. Don't steal the Swiss chart. Don't get that screwed up. All right, let's move to 1263, please.
Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission TechSmart Initiative.
Okay, I want to call on Sue Disciple and Toya Fick and our own Julie Omelchuk to talk about this program. And we have Mary Beth Henry and others from our staff here to back it up. So welcome.
Thank you. Good
morning. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and commissioners. Thank you for having us. To my right are my fellow commissioners representing the City of Portland to the MHCRC, Toya Fick and Leif Hansen. And as you know, to my left is Julie Omelchuk, our Community Grants Program Director. And we're here to talk today about our TechSmart Initiative for Student Success. We plan through this initiative to strategically invest about $19 million over the next 10 years on public schools in Multnomah County to positively impact academic outcomes for all students. So I wanted to give you a little bit of background on how we got here. And Toya is going to speak specifically to the two grants that we have granted recently and our flagship grant programs. And then Leif is going to serve to do cleanup for us and just make sure that we've mentioned all of the details that you would want to know. And of course, Julie's here to answer questions about specific numbers and specific program details. So just to take you back over a decade ago now, our franchise with the cable company at that time established a community access grants. And over a decade, that program resulted in around $10 million in community access grants. These grants go for the use of technology for public institutions and for nonprofits. So when we initiated this program, we felt strongly that the Cable Commission should not be dictating to the community what these grants should be used for or look like other than the constraints around that grant money as outlined in the franchise. But we really wanted the community to come to us with their needs and interests, and we would evaluate those and then do the grant the funds. And that worked beautifully. And we granted all kinds of things, from wiring all of the council chambers throughout the jurisdictions in the county to enhancing distance learning at our community colleges, and then to more pedestrian things like just ensuring that or supporting the funding for telephones in classrooms in Portland Public Schools. So from real high-tech stuff to very basic stuff. And it was successful. But then with this new franchise that was signed a year and a half ago now, it has resulted in more money available to us. We anticipate it will be $27 million for community access grants over the life of the franchise through 2021. So that's a lot of public money. Mm-hmm. And so we thought we've learned a lot about the grant-making process. We know how to do it smoothly and efficiently and accountably. That's what we learned over the last 10 years. Let's see now if instead of serendipity and episodically giving these grants to community organizations, let's see how we might strategically apply these funds. So that led to a very thoughtful process that was over a year long on the commission. And and of course, looking for a grant program that could apply countywide, because we represent six jurisdictions, county and then the municipalities within the county. So luckily, kind of serendipitously, the All Hands Raised partnership was being established. And the partnership supports shared academic outcomes that have been established in partnership with all the jurisdictions for raising student achievement and for closing achievement gaps and reducing disparities. And so that gave us a good forum and a base to think about a more strategic grant program. So as part of that, we are now part of that partnership. And we expect that we will have $19 million to grant for our program. So I think I will pass the baton then to Toya and let her talk about the grants that we have on the table now.
Perfect. So Toya Fick, one of the commissioners, if you will, for the Cable Regulatory Commission. It's still weird to be Commissioner Fick every once in a while. So we have worked so far with two of the school districts in the area. We're going to work with all of them. We are working with all of them, but two of them so far have come forward with plans and proposals to fund. The first is David Douglas, and we are funding them at $1 million over the next 3 years. They are looking to improve teaching and practice and learning at Oral Boyles Elementary School, their early learning laboratory. What they will do is use the technology to give one-to-one devices to all the kids in the building and to help capture teaching and learning practices to help teach those kids a little bit better. I will say that as a mom of a four-year-old, I cannot imagine not having all the answers in my pocket when she stumps me every single day. Our teachers and our buildings really need to be ready to receive kids who are ready to engage with information in a way that we cannot even really imagine. So we're really excited about that one. The second partnership so far that's come before us is with the Park Rose School District. A couple of years ago, they passed a bond that would allow them to give one-to-one devices to all the elementary and middle school kids in their district and to make sure their buildings are wireless. Their bond did not cover the high school, which left about a third of the kids in that district without those sort of capabilities. And this grant at about $370 million over the next 3 years will allow them to do that. One of the great things I like about what they're looking to do with this, with these funds is make sure that wireless is available to families when they come on campus. So if they go to a football game or if they come for a conference and or help their kids with scheduling, they have access to wireless. So many of our low-income families don't have that at home. As I like to say, ninth graders have mamas too. We just need to make sure that they have the barriers removed to engage them. So we're really excited to track the outcomes for those particular grants in those particular school districts. And we hope to come forward with the other three over the next year or so. They are thinking about how they could strategically use these funds in similar ways within their school districts. So that's about it for those two districts. And I'll turn to Leif to make sure we didn't forget anything.
I guess the 2 points I would mention is that it really is a significant shift in how we've been granting. It's a multi-year effort on a lot of these grants, whereas we've been granting the money on just a single-year basis. So the projects can not only have a greater length of time to produce the outcomes, we can look at them over a greater amount of time, but we also now have a whole series of resources and partners that are participating in the evaluation. And so the All Hands Raised partnership is huge. We're a technology and a regulatory body. We're not education experts. And so we need their feedback to really provide the alignment on where this money is being directed and have the outcomes be clear. The other one is the Portland State Partnership and the evaluation of how we're doing on these metrics so that we can study over time how the money is really delivering against some of these goals and some of these targets. The other thing I would mention about the two initial grants, very pleased to see one of the things that we were very focused on when we were reviewing the proposals was how the technology was going to be integrated into the classroom environments. It's not enough to just put the technology in place. You need to make sure that the instruction and the guidance and the resources are there to bring the whole education environment along with the introduction of the technology. And I think both of these grants were very strong in those areas. We're really excited about the program. And we think it's going to be a much better way to guide the money that the city has to offer.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Sorry, go ahead, Sue.
A follow-up point is that, and just thinking that some of our traditional grantees may be watching this segment and wondering, well, has it all dried up for us? And the answer would be no. This is a portion of the money that we get from our cable franchise that's dedicated to this. We will still have about the same amount of money to give to general community access grants. So we will continue to give to public agencies, to nonprofit organizations in the community. That money is still there and available. Historically, we granted about two-thirds of our grant money to educational organizations, and the way we've divided things up now, even with this strategically focused grant, that will be about the same. So we think that it will all fit together really effectively for our community. We also believe with the evaluation resources that Leif mentioned, we will really be able to know over the course of this 10 years what moves the needle in terms of student achievement through the use of technology. And we've looked nationally. There really isn't good research on that. We will really be a learning lab, I think, for the nation in this initiative.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? This is an informational presentation. We don't have to take action on it, but we just wanted to make sure that council saw that this work was well underway. So what's the timing of your next grant cycle?
This one is ongoing. So we are working right now with the three districts who haven't come forward with proposals yet to get them to a place where they're ready to apply. So this one's open.
So when they're ready, you'll accept their application.
Absolutely.
And take a look.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So are these grants available just to school districts, or are they available to organizations that operate Sun Schools within schools and things like that? Or
push the button there, Julie, on the base of that. There you go.
Thank you. I should probably know that.
You're a technology person, so I probably can say that.
Thank you. Again, I'm Julie O'Malchuk, the Community Grants Program Director. And as far as this, the particular program that we're working on, we have a rolling grant cycle, so we're going to be working with the districts on an ongoing basis through the next 10 years to get to our academic outcomes. So does that answer your question? I'm sorry.
Not exactly. So a nonprofit organization that operates a Sun School, say,
yes,
in Park Rose, can
so,
they partner with the district and apply for some of the technology?
We have
money,
two or? Opportunities for them. One current with our community technology grants. Any nonprofits are still able to apply within that program, and that's a current grant cycle. Actually, the period for those grants just closed yesterday. I think we had 16 or 17 applications, and that's an annual amount of about $700,000 to $800,000 a year. And then the commission began this TechSmart initiative with focused on working directly with the districts on strategic investments. However, we recognize that many wraparound organizations, nonprofits, the community colleges are also partners in achieving better academic outcomes for students in Multnomah County. And so that's kind of the next phase of our TechSmart initiative development.
Well, I really appreciate it. This is a great initiative, and I like the work that's gone into it, and I look forward to making a difference in many young people's lives. I just wanted to take this opportunity to once again thank the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission for its investment in the Gateway Domestic Violences Services Center, in the technology that allows survivors to obtain restraining orders at the Gateway Center rather than having to go to the downtown county courthouse. So you invested in that technology that allows for those two-way conferences between a judge and a survivor. And I do want to say, as a result of that, there are more restraining orders now issued at the Gateway Center than there are at the downtown county courthouse. So thank you once again for your foresight and your investment in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for your support, Commissioner.
So, Julie, remind me of the mechanics of this granting process. The Office for Community Technology are the staff who help process the grant applications with the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, and then those grants are sent out directly. They don't come to council. Is that correct?
Correct. Under the intergovernmental agreement that created the commission, All of the funds that were negotiated in the franchise agreements with the cable companies, and you have four franchise agreements, the county has four, all those funds come to the commission, and the commission is the grant-making body for those funds.
And you're the city is the designated staffing of that commission?
Correct. The commission contracts with the City of Portland for staffing services.
I just have to note that I think this is one of the coolest volunteer opportunities ever, that there are not very many volunteer bodies that get to divide up $27 million. And Commissioner Fick, I hope you get used to that title of Commissioner Fick. So thanks to all of you for being here today and for the work that you do. I know, actually, that was one of the first things I did when I was in charge of the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management, was go to a Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission hearing that ended at 10:30 in the evening, and I discovered that TriMet doesn't work very well to my neighborhood from there. So that was impressive how much time you put in as volunteers, and I certainly appreciate all of the work you do. I want to give a shout-out to Carol Studenman, your chair, who I had the honor of appointing to the commission, and I just really appreciate all of the work that you do. Also want to thank Mary Beth Henry and David Olson, the previous director, who did negotiate that contract with Comcast, and indeed Comcast, because this extra grant money is coming from our franchise agreement with Comcast, and Comcast does a lot of good work in the community, and I'm assuming is very happy with this approach, this strategic initiative to look at equity and look at underserved communities and maybe not even wait for them to come for grants, but proactively reach out. And I love the approach of this several years at a time rather than constantly being applying. It does allow you to have more oversight and looking back at it. If you could just tell everybody, Julie, please, how, if folks are now very excited and very miffed that they missed the application deadline yesterday, where do they look to find out about the next grant cycle?
We have a pretty simple website address, and it's mhcrc.org. And we're one of the things that's nice about having the commission being the grant-making body is that staff is really available for consultation, in-person meetings, and we really do everything that we can to outreach to a variety of groups and try to get as many fundable applications through the door as possible. So a phone call is great as well.
That was my next question, because I know that some folks are watching on Portland Community Media Channel 30, which again is funded mm-hmm. through our franchise agreements. And what's the phone number that they should call if they don't have access to technology and just want to call you?
Well, I will give my direct line number, 503-823-4188.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Well, I just want to say, seeing the results of this program, I mean, that we're putting Chromebooks in front of kids in schools where they wouldn't otherwise probably have access to that technology, and that we're doing this right after we heard from an economic development consultant who said the number one factor for our success as a community will be how our workforce is prepared. Mm-hmm. We didn't think about that connection before now, or at least I didn't, but it's obvious that the work that you're doing is supporting the community that we want to be in terms of access to opportunity, so we really appreciate it. And I can't help but notice a little parallel here, which is, let's see, the city gives franchise authority to a international technology corporation because they're using the public right-of-way. They pay their taxes, and good things happen.
Mm-hmm.
We should try that more often.
There you go. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay, now I know there are a lot of people here on the street fund item, and there are a lot of people here on the body camera proposal, so I'm proposing to take those two next. And I think because we're only going to be acting on some amendments this morning on the street fund and setting over the larger debate until next week and thereafter, that we can do that fairly swiftly. So if that makes sense, then I'm going to get you to read items 1271 and 1272 and turn it over to Commissioner Novick.
1271, create the Portland Street Fund and establish a non-residential transportation fee to fund Portland street maintenance and transportation safety needs. 1272, establish a residential transportation income tax to fund Portland street maintenance and transportation safety needs through the Portland Street Fund.
Commissioner Novick and staff.
So as people have been following this know, we have made some modifications to our latest proposal, including last week, adding a sunset clause and establishing a base funding level for pavement preservation. What we're doing today is adding what I might call the Stauges Amendment, like the Shawshank Redemption. We heard from a number of proprietors of, including one named James Stauges of Bridgetown Bowties, of proprietors from very, very small businesses who said that the schedule as we had it could result in the fees for some of them being a significant portion of their revenues. And what we've decided is that for home-based businesses with gross revenues of less than $50,000 a year, we will have a complete exemption. For businesses that are not home-based that will have gross less than $50,000 a year, we will have a $3 fee that does not vary by business category. We're also clarifying that these provisions apply to nonprofits as well as for-profit businesses, and that the $3 base fee will apply to both businesses and nonprofits rather than, you know, having a 50% discount and a $1.50 fee for nonprofits. So that's the that's the guts of the proposal, I believe. Celia, do you want to elaborate?
My name is Celia Heron with the Office of Management and Finance. I'm here with Jamie Waltz from the Bureau of Transportation. The memo we've just distributed, the cover memo, explains the changes that Commissioner Novick just outlined. And so there really are two policy issues related to the amendments. And then one is to establish the exception to the for the home-based business. And the goal is to avoid creating an undue burden on the smallest of the small businesses in Portland. The other amendment is to establish that cap of $3 for any small business with gross revenues less than $50,000. This is part of a packet that included ordinance exhibits, city code. So the first replacement document that you have is the Exhibit A, which is a series of code language, and the only change today is the addition of a definition for the purposes of the Portland Street Fund for home-based business. So that would go in, assuming you pass that. The next item, Exhibit D, is the fee schedule for the non-residential transportation fee. And again, as Commissioner Novick described, there is now a new category. We're calling it microbusiness. It's your first category on the left for any business grossing less than $50,000 a year. And it also, in that the header to that column, it describes the complete exemption for home-based businesses grossing less than 50. And finally, the only other change to this document is an addition of a footnote at the very bottom that talks about the minimum rate being $3 a month for any non-exempt entity. So those are the changes for the amendments.
All right. A couple questions either to Steve or the panel. About how much revenue does the micro business fee generate annually, or is forecast to generate?
I have an answer to a slightly different question, which I meant to give earlier, which is that this change will cost us some revenue. It will cost us about $2.2 million plus processing. Maybe it'll add about another FTE's worth of administrative cost and revenue to actually go through and identify who's eligible for the exemption for the small amount, like identifying the home-based businesses. In terms of what this fee will generate, Jamie, do you have that?
Jamie Waltz with Portland Bureau of Transportation. With the exemptions, there's about 3,600 businesses that are home-based that fall under the exemption category. That's about $0.1 million, $100,000. And then in total, as Commissioner Novick said, it's about 2.2 total reduction in revenue. So we're not going to be changing the rates of the other businesses. So it was a $23 million proposal, so minus the $2.2 million.
So let me just sharpen the question just to, and I thank you for that answer. If we were to waive the micro fee in year one, what would that cost the Treasury?
If we simply exempted everybody who,
just in year one?
In
under
the first
micro,
year?
Under the micro fee.
Let's see. We've got 15,000 businesses paying $3 a
year. Year one of the business.
I don't know, because I think that would require, you know, additional administrative expense to figure out which businesses in year one rather than year five. I mean, if we exempted all of the micro businesses, you know, 15,000 times three would be $45,000.
And you get the math right?
It's pretty close, yeah.
Is a terrible question to ask a guy.
I'm just curious, if we wanted to exempt in year one, why would that be? What's the administrative burden that would create? Couldn't we just have someone give them the option of filling out a form that says, this is the first year of my business and I otherwise qualify? Or does it get more complicated than that?
I don't think there'd be substantial increase. We talked about a marginal increase, but it wouldn't move the needle in terms of the range for Tom Thomas Land with the revenue division. Wouldn't really move the needle too far.
So I really appreciate both of these amendments and the work the commissioner in charge has done. I just there was that extra piece about whether for the real small business where that first year was a make or break year, whether we would exempt them all together, and pick them up in year two, and whether A, that has a revenue implication, and B, does that create extra work for anybody, and C, does the council support it? Just raising that issue.
Just personally, on a policy level, I think that there can be some businesses where the make or break year is year one, and there might be other businesses where the make or break year is year three. I personally would not support that distinction, but it sounds like making that distinction would not have a major revenue impact.
Commissioner Fish, just to clarify, are you proposing for all new businesses or just for some new businesses?
All new businesses that fall below a certain threshold. So we're talking in the in Exhibit D about micro businesses. I mean, that might be the line, but the kinds of businesses where that first year is filled with peril, financing, regulatory, and otherwise, and getting out of the first year is a challenge. And this came up in the last hearing. I'm just raising it. It may not have council support. I just wanted to ventilate it.
And Commissioner, I apologize. I did mean to get back to you on that. I confess I made an assumption, or one should make assumptions, that this provision, which has a very small fee for businesses with gross revenues below $50,000, I kind of assume that businesses that are going great guns and making a lot of revenue in their first year, you have less concern about. So I hope that implicitly this would address your concern, but I apologize for not explicitly discussing your concern.
Well, maybe we should wait for testimony. If it's a community issue, we can come back. Otherwise, I think these are both good amendments.
Okay.
Thank you.
So unless there are further questions for staff, again, let me clarify what we're going to try to do procedurally here, which is I'm going to take a motion to put these amendments on the table. We're going to take public testimony only on these amendments. I'll say that again in a minute. And then we're going to have another hearing in a week on potential additional amendments, including the one that was just discussed. It's our plan to have a full council discussion of an amended package. We anticipate additional amendments by next week, and then schedule a second reading for January, likely January 7th. That's the plan as of now. So the only subject on the table for the council today, particularly, I want to emphasize this because we have a lot of people here to testify on other council items. The only question before the council today is this a good amendment or a bad amendment? Not is this a good idea overall or not? We've talked about that. We'll talk about it more again next week. But the only subject before the council today is are we going to adopt this amendment or not? And I want to ask people to please confine themselves to that question. If you don't care, then fine, please don't testify. If you do care about that particular issue, please come up and let us know. So with that, I'll thank our staff, open the public hearing, and see if there's anyone that wants to testify. Oh, first, we have to take a motion to put those amendments on the table.
So moved.
Second.
There's further council discussion of that. So a roll call on putting those amendments before the council.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Thank you, Commissioner Novick. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Thank you. Okay. Anyone want to speak on the amendments?
We have 10 people signed up.
Okay. On the amendments, again, please, folks.
The first three are Bob Clark, Robert McCullough, and Joe Walsh.
Good morning.
Hi, Mayor.
Oh, it's okay. It's on.
I thank Commissioner Fritz for sending me a thank you note for my written testimony. And I'm Bob Clark, Southeast Portland, volunteer for the Taxpayer Association. And as to the amendment, again, we think the thing is too intrusive in that it's beyond, it's not necessary to do this type of ordinance where you get into people's how much they make and how much they don't when you can go to other alternatives. So we're still opposed to the underlying street tax ordinance.
Know that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Robert?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good news and bad news. Would you like one or more?
Hit us.
Good news is I'll be testifying in Montreal next week on uranium tailing impacts on Hudson Bay, so you may not see me. The bad news is, and this does pertain directly to this set of arithmetic, we did file suit against you yesterday to get the information behind these estimates out in the public record. The request was made 40 days ago. I see we have Mark here. Hi, Mark. He agreed to supply it 40 days ago. We've received nothing. The most recent information is people were brainstorming on the data. So I will respect your request to go back to this. Steve, your numbers are wrong again. And if you want to take time, I can walk you through them. The fact is that this small category was addressed in documents provided on September 11th. If you use the September 11th data and walk through this, you get a different answer. In every case, we have had less information, less mathematics, and more errors on this than anything I've seen in the city in many years. And one last comment, and then I will fold my tent and steal away. I still do have a day job in the few moments I'm not talking to you guys. It is interesting that the excellent economic development presentation put us first on intermodal transport and second on rail. Those are exactly the categories that are missing from the street fee calculations. I like the level of questions. I think you have the right answers. I support it entirely. But you now have two completely inconsistent data sets, the one from economic development and the broken data set here. So that, and I apologize for repeating myself, but unfortunately, when you get appointed to the voluntary chair of Southeast Uplift, they send you out to do battle every day, apparently. Never volunteer. Never, never volunteer.
We're glad you did. Thank you, Robert. Mr. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. And no matter how you dress this up, it is still a pig. So you can make all the amendments you want. You can satisfy all the different groups. And maybe you'll get the three votes. Still a pig. It looks like a pig. Walks like a pig. And the reason that I use that strong language is you constantly have people coming here telling you this is not ready for prime time, and the only way you're going to do this is to package it and put it to the voters. You do less than that, Commissioner Novick, that's a betrayal.
Mr. Walsh, do you support or oppose these
Don't
amendments?
Don't interrupt me, please. I only have 3 minutes.
On this subject.
On this subject.
You don't have 3 minutes per se. You have 3 minutes on this subject.
On this subject.
Yes, on the amendments. Do you like them or not?
No, I don't like the amendment because it's part of a problem that you have, that you keep trying to push this and make it satisfying to different groups, and maybe you'll succeed. Maybe the Business Alliance will buckle and say, okay, yeah, it's all right. Maybe the oil companies will say, yeah, it's all right. I don't know if you're going to win this or not. You got two votes each way, as far as I know. And unfortunately, Amanda, you're sitting on the fence. So we are against this amendment on the very principle that you must put a tax to the voters of this city, all 600,000, not three elected politicians.
Right, but should what we send to the voters if we did that include this amendment or not? We still have to adopt it in this chamber, even if it were going to the voters. So should we include this amendment or not? Do you like it or not?
You're asking me to go into an outhouse and say, do I like the toilet paper?
Oh, God.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's take the next three.
Thank you. Mayor, I promise not to learn my rhetoric in this chamber. Thank you.
That's a good notion. Next three.
Next three are Lightning, Crystal Ilinski, and Michelle Munt.
It's over there, Joe. It's over here. There you go. No, beside the table. There you go.
Let's go ahead and go with Marianne Schwab.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Humanitarian PDX. On the amendment, I do believe on the 50,000 range that everybody should be excluded for the first year as far as home-based or other businesses. Again, a point that Commissioner Fish brought up is that first year on a lot of these smaller businesses is that first year of survival. They're scrambling to make it work. They're trying a new idea, a new concept. So that's not an unreasonable thing to put into place, because the last thing we want to do is have small businesses begin to go under. It's going to cost us a lot of money. Again, like I said on the street fee issue here, is that a lot of people disagree with the council vote. I want to see that happen immediately. It's being pushed out too far, but I want to see a step-up plan put into place, because there needs to be an adjustment to refine it. We can refine a proposal like this for the next 2 years, but we need some revenue to go toward the transportation. We need PDC to look at it. We need other avenues to look at it. But again, we know there's a certain number, but it needs to be adjusted, refined, and other ways of creating revenue implemented. And that's my position. And again, like I say, Commissioner Fish, you brought up a good point on the new businesses and to protect their interests. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back. Good morning.
My name is Michelle Munt, and once again, I think I'll pass, because the Kleenex imagery is too big, good of an act to follow. And I'm using the word Kleenex because toilet paper would be a generic, but we're the elephant in the room is the corporations, corporatism.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Schwab, good morning. If you're going to use that microphone, just push the little button on the bottom to turn it on. There you go.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and City Commissioners. I, for one, I know it takes three votes to do anything, and I'm very happy and pleased that Commissioner Amanda Fritz is sitting on the fence, giving all of us a chance for input here, not that you all don't. And I'm really sorry that Commissioner Novick came into such a mess. 15 years of deferred maintenance is huge. We're all trying to support him. It's just the avenue he's taken. I'm not too sure. It's been a lumpy, bumpy road. And as a member at large at Southeast Uplift, we had a very difficult time. I refused to take, I abstained from the straw vote, whether to support this or not. And the reason I'm not happy with this, the street fee tax, is because we're not taxing everyone. To have a railroad come in here and they're just a manager of a big company and 1,000 lifts a month putting heavy, heavy cargo on freight trains, and we're a freight train or a transportation hub, where's the equity in this? We always use the word equity, 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 yet when I look at this list, you know, beginning businesses and elderly, and is it really fair when we're overlooking a huge, huge population demographic? Every employer in the city knows where their employees live. How many are coming across the CRC every day? How many are in queue trying to get out of here? Is it go back to Orson Welles? The actor who was in the 1984 novel and movie. There's a way that we know where they live, and they could just be billed. And the fact that we have to have an administrative cost even to collect this, and we know how bad it is with the arts and the school tax, are we really getting dollar for dollar that we really need? And so when people are driving in from Marion County, Clackamas County, and Washington County, working in our city, using our streets, let's think about that. Maybe when we do a little bit more work, I would really be supporting this. But I kind of agree with Joe. We really need to take this to the voters, but it needs to be a good product. And right now, I think it needs a little more work. Thank you.
That's why we're here. Thank you. Okay, next three, please.
Are Gary Sargent, Ann Sanderson, and Eric Fruits.
Okay, good morning. You're on first, Gary.
Good morning. I'm Gary Sargent. I'm a third-generation business operator here in the city of Portland of a fourth-generation business. Our family's been involved in business here in Portland since 1949, providing Portlanders with transportation needs. Been involved in the Lentz Urban Renewal District since its conception. And my father and I were founding fathers of the 82nd Avenue Business Association. Currently, I serve as vice president of the 82nd Avenue of Roses Business Association. Since we were not offered an option to participate with the business work group, we have an amendment to be dovetailed into this amendment. And that amendment would consist of exempting all businesses that are fronted by a state highway. As you all know, 82nd Avenue is a state highway. And it's in such poor condition that it's the main arterial to all those businesses. And those businesses would be cited with this street fee, yet they would not receive any benefit since the road is in such condition the city of Portland will not accept it from the state. We have an it that would resolve, but we're limited to discussing this amendment. So I ask that this amendment be considered and or dovetailed into this exemption, because it too, like micro businesses, you know, we are suffering businesses, and I want to add this too, because it's very prudent. This amendment is not self-serving for my business whatsoever. My business is on Foster Road, so I would receive no benefit whatsoever from any exemption. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate Can I just ask you a question on that, sir?
Yes.
And you have your company is Sargent's Towing?
No affiliation whatsoever.
I was thinking, well, you said transportation company.
That is owned by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Preston, who was, if you recall, the old TV show, Canadian Mounties. Okay, well, Sergeant Preston of the Canadian Mounties. So he dove that. We get that confusion quite a bit. Our name is spelled differently.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
But let me just ask you a philosophical question.
Sure.
So even though I no longer have a car, on the weekends when I borrow my wife's car and I go to a favorite breakfast place in Montevilla, I travel along a federal highway, a state highway, a city road, and sometimes unimproved roads. And they're all essential for me getting from point A to point B. And I hope they're all well-maintained in order for me to get there safely. So I just, in terms of your point, you're saying a carve-out for businesses because they're adjacent to a state road that's not in great condition. But the people who shop there and the people who work there are very likely to travel on a host of roads. And we're here talking about a way to better maintain the city's roads. So why do you think anybody should get a pass just because they happen to be immediately adjacent to either a federally maintained road or state road or city road?
Well, that's the answer is simple. The main access to their business is on that arterial that is not serviced by the city of Portland. So as a commuter, I may decide, you know what, I don't want to drive down 82nd Street because it's got two intersections there that are defined as very unsafe and have been there that condition, Stark Street, since I can remember when our business was on the corner there. So it's we start with exemptions and exemptions and exemptions, and I think that everybody in this room would agree that the roads are in a deteriorated condition. Now, if the fix, which the present proposal denies capture of funding from some of the main abusers. On my way in here from Damascus, I-84 backed up with commuters coming to work in the city of Portland from Troutdale, Fairview. I-5 backed up with commuters coming from the state of Washington to come to work here in the city of Portland. The Sunset Highway, same conditions. So when you factor those people in, they aren't going to pay. You're burdening the citizens with that. Now, if you have a plan that can capture or at least make some attempt to capture some money from those individuals that are accessing these roads that you're asking the citizens and the businesses of Portland alone to pay for. Now, it could be perceived that you know there's some kind of a divide and conquer with this, where you're exempting individuals and exempting low income and exempting now micro businesses as a proposal, but the roads need to be repaired, and I think that if it's referred to the voters in such a package, look at your park situation. It was referred to the voters. You made sense with your argument. The arts tax, same thing. You made sense with an argument, and the taxpayers passed those initiatives. So I think if you take a step back and you go back to the work groups, and by the way, the business work groups, I sat in on one of those meetings as an observer, and they were being told how minutes were that of the previous meetings, and they weren't factual. So they were being led in some direction, and they do not agree with the proposal whatsoever, as it's put. Lady talked about the railroads. You know, some of the bigger companies that put a huge burden on the roads are not being taxed. You got FedEx that has a base. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'll just say you answered my question, and I want to thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate it.
And I just want to point out, because you may not be staying, there is an item on the agenda later that directs the Revenue Bureau to look into that question that you talked about as to whether we can charge people coming in from other jurisdictions. So we don't know the answer to that, but there is a resolution calling for them to do that work.
Well, I think that, and I've thought about this very hard, and I appreciate that information. The only way that you can capture that would be somewhere to capture it on a paycheck to those individuals. So, I mean, that's the only way that any citizen is and or person coming in from an outside, you're going to capture that. You could raise the gas tax, but you know what? They're going to buy gas in Clackamas at Costco. You know,
we're going to look into that. We're definitely, and so you've raised some really good questions. Thank you.
All right, we'll try to figure that out. Ms. Sanderson, welcome.
My name is Ann Sanderson. I'm a small business owner, and I run Stop Portland Street Fee on Facebook. I'm also a former member, I guess, of the Summer Non-Residential Work Group. And sometimes I have flashbacks to those work groups, particularly when you, Commissioner Novick, say the word work group. But I'm having one of those flashbacks today for a different reason, and the reason is that I just got handed these amendments. They weren't online. There was a press release last night at some point, and you want us to talk about this. And it's very much like the summer I spent having things passed out the last 10 minutes and saying, okay, discuss them now. What do you feel about this? And, you know, we haven't had time to even look at them. Everything that you do, the details matter. They influence one thing and then the next. So while I came down to talk about the amendments, I can ask you mostly about questions that we have about them. Just based on what we saw last night, one of the things that happens when I'm not here, I know it seems like I'm here a lot, but I actually have a job and I cut hair. And the great thing about it is I talk to people who have questions too. The street fee naturally comes up with my work. And I get to talk a lot to people who are from all walks of life, and they have questions too. So some of the questions are about the residential, and I think in one case this does this amendment does inform that, which is if it's less $2.2 million because of this amendment, which, you know, is good for microbusinesses, does that then reduce the 50-50 split so that residents are going to pay $2.2 million less? I mean, the premise that you started with is that it would be 50-50.
And that is a good question, and that's one of the things we need to address in the next week.
Right. So it would have been nice to have that amendment so we could have asked the question earlier from you and all our emails that we send you all the time. Some other questions that we have are the differences between, because we're talking about gross revenues in businesses, when you're talking small businesses and you get to that $50,001, it makes a difference whether you're a consultant or whether you're selling widgets out of your home. The person who has to manufacture something, even in their basement late at night as a second job, doesn't get to keep $50,000. And so when they get to that next level, if they're retail, they're paying, you know, considered retail out of their home, even if they're shipping it. I don't even know if that's the right classification, but you're going to end up with paying $15 a month, where a consultant is a service and pays $3 a month on that next amount. So it doesn't seem like it's really fair, Ed, still. How does a neighborhood or business association pay? They don't have square footage, there's no revenue, there's no employees. And is a food cart a restaurant? If they're eking out a living with a food cart, are they paying $15 a month because they're considered a restaurant, but the consultant who works at home is paying $3 a month and keeping more money? These are questions that are all we're still asking. And if we have this many questions so close to when you want to vote on this, I think that we are still going too fast, and it's a moving target for all of us. So I'm going to tell you that there's one question that isn't up in the air, though. We're going to take this to a vote, because the polls that we listen to say that the majority of Portlanders feel that this needs to be asked, and we're going to help them do that.
Thank you. Mr. Fruits?
Hi, my name's Eric Fruits. I'm a business owner, homeowner, on the board of two small nonprofits, one of them the Neighborhood Association, which was, as far as I understand, will probably pay the street fee. I don't know why they should, considering they don't have an office, don't have a staff, and barely have any revenue. But anyway, I'm actually going to start off by, saying something nice, and I will say something nice. And that nice thing is, I know I blew it already. That nice thing is that this is a step in the right direction. It's a clumsy step. It's a very clumsy step, but it is a step in the right direction. There are some big problems with it. One is, and I think this echoes what Mr. McCullough was saying, the numbers just don't add up. And if you gave us some of that data that we can double check it, then maybe we can help you make them add up. I think that there seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding of mathematics in PBOT. For example, they said that with this exemption, we would have a $2.2 million shortfall in tax revenues, and that's based on 3,600 businesses. Do a little back-of-the-envelope math, that's $50 a month. There's not many businesses that pay $50 a month, so I don't know.
Actually, Eric, it's based on 18,000 businesses that have less than $50,000.
It would have been nice to get those numbers.
It's only 3,500 home-based businesses.
And why don't they tell us that? Why don't they put it on the website? Why don't they email it to us? Why do I have to hear from you right now instead of when we ask for the stuff? It's like we're playing a game of hide-and-go-seek, and it's like we're only going to reveal stuff when we want to reveal it, when it's convenient. Anyway, backing up, it really also illustrates a fundamental problem with the way that this tax is structured. It seems to be designed by someone who's never stepped foot in the business. Because we talk about a $50,000 business, and then using your words, Commissioner Novick, if you're bigger, you're going great guns. And Commissioner Fish raised a good point about start-off businesses. If I had a startup business and I made $1 million in a year as a consultant, I'm doing really good. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be here. I'd be driving my Bentley. But if I had a startup business that was a convenience store that made $1 million a year, there wouldn't be a second year because I'd be failing. $1 million a year convenience store is a very poorly performing convenience store. But still, it's considered a big, big business in these tax fees. It wouldn't get the exemption, even though it's failing. And so I think we really need to think hard about how we scale this, and that there's a huge difference between $1 million consultant and $1 million convenience store and $1 million online Etsy bow tie seller. Those are huge problems, and they've been in here all along. They've been baked in. We've flagged it over and over again, but it's highlighted again with this amendment. Again, the amendment's a step in the right direction, but it's a very clumsy step, and it highlights some fundamental flaws with this street fee, street tax, property tax, whatever.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, is there others?
The last person who signed up is Dwight Reed.
Okay, come on up.
I get the pleasure of being by myself.
You do, you do, solo.
Good morning, and thank you. I appreciate all the work that you guys do, and I think your hearts are in the right place, and I think you're doing what you think is right for the city, and I do appreciate that, and I want to start by saying that.
Thanks.
My name is Dwight Reed. I own Bridgetown Chiropractic and Wellness, and I also have what would be considered a micro business called Reed Land Holdings, which owns, on paper, one of the commercial properties that I practice out of. I have three clinics, and two of them are in Portland, and one of them is in Clackamas. We do well. You know, we are a profitable business. But I do want to kind of go back and say, as a homeowner who has decided to live and, you know, open up businesses in Portland, it's difficult to want to swallow yet another handful of fees. And I do believe that many hands makes light work, you know, and what we're trying to do is find every possible exemption that we can. I think that there are certain situations where exemptions are needed, and I get that, but then you end up lumping more onto people who really don't feel that they deserve to be paying more, you know, and so we want to talk about equitable. It's hard to kind of top what a lot of the people have already said because they've said a lot of the things I was already thinking. One of them being capturing revenue from commuters who live outside of the city but work in the city. You know, if you look, you know, I work and live within a couple miles of each other. I don't have to get on freeways. You know, my commute is very short. I can ride a bike, and I appreciate that. But if you look at rush hour, you know, morning and afternoon, every day, you see there are a ton of people who would be exempt from any of these fees who are clearly using, you know, the roads. And when we started this entire conversation, and I've been kind of watching in the background because I work, you know, it's very difficult for me to make these meetings, but if a guy like me schedules himself out and comes down and wants to kind of say his piece, you can probably figure there's 10,000 other guys just like me, you know, that can't, you know. When we went from a trip sort of user fee into more of an income base, I think that's where things kind of got off the rails a little bit. And, you know, having the safeguards in order to be able to trust that my tax returns with the city are being, you know, managed properly, I mean, that's a little difficult. I file my corporate returns with the county. You know, I mean, I pay my business license fees and all that, you know. I definitely understand the need for the road maintenance. You know, I get it. But I think we need to kind of take a step back and figure out a way. And the only thing that I could think of, which everybody has already mentioned, I know it's been out there, is when we look at more of a gas tax, which I also understand is on a state level. But the legislation, you know, down in Salem, largely Democratic. I'm sure if you went down and talked to them, asked for a municipal fee, I'm sure that they would oblige. And I think that's a fair and equitable way to approach it, at least for a start.
Great.
Anyway, thank you for giving me the time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And sure. Thank you for making the time and for all of you. Thank you very much. Okay, so as I mentioned, we're going to continue this item until next week. We'll likely have more amendments. They'll be posted as soon as they're ready. And again, if we're not ready by next week, we will continue it beyond that. So thank you all. We're continuing those two items until next week. And then let's move a little out of order here. Again, we've got a number of people.